If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Let's play two.
Back! Back! Back!
High! Way back! It might be! It could be! It is! Holy cow!
The fly! He scores! Cup win!
Ball! Game! Over! Cubs win!
Welcome in, fans. This is the Cubs Talk Podcast for NBC Sports Chicago. I am James Naveau. I am joined today by Nate Poppin in the virtual podcast studio powered by PointsBet. You'll notice Layla Rahimi's not here. She has a very full plate of coverage this week and technical problems, just kind of a, you know, cascading group of reasons why she's not here today. But she will be back next week talking about the Chicago Cubs. But Nate and I are here to hold down the fort. And of course, we have real meaningful baseball to discuss here. We are going to break down the Cubs opening weekend series against the Milwaukee Brewers. We're going to get into a little bit of minor league talk, some rules talk. It's going to be a baseball palooza, y'all, and it's going to be a really fun evening. Nate, how are you doing today, man?
Pretty good. Just a lazy day in the burbs here. So
yeah, you notice you're not at the NBC Sports Chicago studios today. You've got
a little more going on in the background here.
lots of stuff in that background there. Yeah. I know I've got the hat wall back here, but I think you've got me defeated in terms of items there. So
too many posters. That's the problem.
Yeah. Our YouTube audience is in for a real treat today visually, but we're going to instead treat your ears to some discussion of that first series for the Cubs. One on opening day, shut the Milwaukee Brewers out. Phenomenal performance by Marcus Stroman. And then things kind of went south for the Cubs, losing their last two against Milwaukee to start the season 1-2. We can dig into the particulars here, Nate, throughout this conversation. But I think first things first, kind of your first impressions of that opening series.
I think starting pitching is going to kind of carry the way this entire season. I mean, as it does with most teams, it was great to see the production they got out of the starters the first two games. And then it kind of went away Sunday, but, and that ties back into my main second point, the walks. There's just too many free passes and quite honestly, not enough strikeouts. I mean, you're not missing bats enough. So you're getting into a situation where you are pitching to contact and your defense has to bail you out. But without the with no shift now, it's becoming pretty apparent that it's going to be a little more difficult to survive as a contact oriented starting pitcher in this league if you don't have a great defense behind you. I think the Cubs do, as far as infield defense goes, have a great defense behind their starting pitchers. It's just it's going to take some time. I think the shift rule is probably the one rule that is going to take the most amount of time for teams to actually get used to and try to, I don't know, you're going to have to try to finagle your way around obviously the rule, and in certain spots you might be able to bring in another outfielder, but it's just going to come down to basically execution as far as the infield goes. But those are my two big things.
Yeah. I mean that, and you hit on probably two of the biggest narratives of the weekend. And I think that the walks is a great place to start because it really did allow the Brewers to, for lack of a better term, they kind of dinked and dunked the Cubs over the weekend. They weren't hitting for a ton of power. Their exit velocities were not like super high. They were not making really great contact against basically anybody. I think I pointed out during the game yesterday, I think the Brewers, I think it was six of their seven hardest hit balls at one point in the game had all gone for outs. Like, these were literally like little flare shots. I mean, the game-winning hit on Saturday by William Contreras was a little flare shot to right field. It wasn't very hard contact, but it was enough. And it's exactly because of why you said, where they're just walking way too many batters. The bullpen especially was guilty of this. I think basically every single pitcher, every single reliever, at least for the Cubs on Saturday, had walked at least a batter. Sunday was kind of a similar thing where free passes were just killing the Cubs and they were allowing that weak contact to basically beat them. And look, I get that, you know, there are going to be games like that where the weak contact is going to end up paying, you know, paying dividends for a team, but you cannot continue to add fuel to the fire and not expect it to eventually become a conflagration, right? Like, it's going to become this inferno of offense. And the Brewers, who we talked about last week, we said that their right. offense wasn't necessarily that great. But you don't need to have a great offense when you're just getting base runners and stealing bases and making things happen with weak contact. And that's exactly what the Brewers ended up doing. And it was throughout the bullpen. It wasn't a single guy outside of the starting pitching. I think that the bullpen had some rough moments during that opening weekend. And I know, again, it wasn't a lot of hard contact. It seems fixable. But yeah, they dramatically need to cut back on the walks, because that really killed them this weekend.
Yeah, like you mentioned with the dink and doink, you know, you can afford that whip number to be, if you're a reliever, to be a quite a bit higher, you know, usually than a starter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that the walks plus hits, once you start tacking on too many free passes, and then you give, you know, the other team another bite at the apple and then another bite, and you're just stacking the propensity that you are going, the dam is going to break at some mm-hmm. point, even if that dam is only a two run single or a one run single, whatever, it's still going to break. These are still major league hitters. You know, they don't look great on paper, the Brewers, but you know, they could surprise. They have probably the best starting staff in the division.
They really do.
Maybe the best, overall bullpen in the division, but mm-hmm. I think the Cardinals kind of give them a run for their money there. But yeah, it was just that was the only really disappointing those were the disappointing moments of the opening series for me, was just the free passes coupled with the high contact rate.
Oh, I have more disappointments that we can potentially get into here. But before we kind of transition to a little bit more of a positive topic, we're kind of doing a negativity sandwich here, I think, where we're going to do negative bread, positive meat. Before we get to that, however, I do have to ask you, do you know the only Cubs pitcher over the weekend who did not surrender a single walk?
Ooh, I'm going to go with... No, I don't think I know.
It was Mr. Edbert Alzolay, had three strikeouts and zero walks in his one appearance of the weekend. Everybody else allowed at least one. Mark Leiter Jr., the de facto, quote unquote, lefty in the bullpen, since he had the reverse splits, had three walks in two innings. I mean, even Marcus Stroman, who pitched really well on opening day, he issued three free passes. Like, he was barely allowing contact at all. He also had... eight strikeouts. So that was, you know, obviously the strikeouts were good. Him and Justin Steele both had eight strikeouts. Very positive for the Cubs. Stroman's stuff just looked electric in that first game. Loved the movement on all of his pitches, but those free passes end up coming back to bite you, even when you have a good quality defensive team like the Cubs seem to have. And that's where I think we need to get into the one big positive takeaway for the weekend. Is that dude named Dansby Swanson, who had three hits in each of the first two games, made some sparkling defensive plays. That dude came in and was exactly as advertised, and all the hand-wringing during the spring about his struggles at the plate and his inability to hit home runs or drive in runs. It all kind of seems silly now looking back at it, just based on how he performed in those first three games.
Yeah, it actually feels, like you said, silly that that was even a discussion, that, you know, he had this slow start in spring. I mean, spring training is spring training. You know, some guys are just working on holes in their swing. Some pitchers are just working on certain pitches. You don't know what you're, you know, what each person's story is as to why their results weren't great. It could be because they were setting themselves up for, you know, working on certain things. But yeah, he's, you know, he's being paid to be the best player on the team. He's kind of going to be the metronome of this squad. He's going to make them tick. You kind of know what you're getting defensively. It's going to be solid / flashy. I don't think it's going to be Baez flashy at any point. But I mean, you know, the backhanded play he had the other day, I mean, was,
oh yeah,
impossibly impressive. I mean,
yeah, it's just literally like he made that look like it was absolutely nothing. He made a wonderful backhand pick at shortstop and had the wherewithal to see the runner breaking for home and threw him out with ease. Nice play by Yan Gomes, by the way, to stay in proper position. That's always tricky for a catcher on those plays, but it was just even little things like that dude did correctly this weekend.
Yeah, and he's not, you know, like you said, the power will come, I think. Mm-hmm. I think with most MLB players, they tend to rely on their defense to kind of carry them forward, even if they are struggling at the plate, which he's not, you know, hitting over 500.
Yep.
But I think if you ask most MLB players, they will tell you that, you know, they rely on their defense to be the constant. And then, you know, the ebbs and flows of the offense are kind of just things that you have to ride out throughout the season. But I mean, so far, so great, obviously, with Dansby Swanson.
Sure. And I mean, like you said, he's basically the straw that's stirring the drink on offense. He went 7-for-12 over the weekend, had a couple of RBIs, some really hard hit balls as well. Just looked really comfortable at the plate. Outside of him, though, like Ian Happ had a solid weekend. He had three hits, hit the first Cubs home run of the season, drew four walks, did strike out five times, though, which is not what you want to be seeing from an Ian Happ at this point. So aside from Dansby Swanson, anybody else kind of stand out to you on the offensive side of things as kind of a guy that you're more optimistic about after the first weekend of the season?
I mean, you got to love the bombs from Wisdom. You know what the power is going to be usually with him, and you know he's probably going to hit around 230, 240. So that's pretty much been as expected so far. Nothing else. I mean, you know, it's good to see Bellinger, you know, put one in the seats.
Yes.
That was nice to see.
Just a spoiler alert, we're recording this on Monday night, so if you're wondering what we mean when we talk about Bellinger, he did have an ofer in the opening series, but did get his first Cubs hit against the Cincinnati Reds on Monday night, and it just so happened to be a three-run belly bomb, as the broadcast pointed out.
Yeah, but as far as the offense goes, I mean, you know, it's April at Wrigley Field. I don't expect a lot, so
I think
remains to be seen.
I do think that's basically the entirety of the optimism in terms of the offense is probably those two guys. I was a little bit surprised at how infrequently the Cubs tried to steal bases and kind of generate runs in that particular way. While stolen bases are up across baseball, and we're going to talk about this later in the show, the Cubs had exactly uno stolen bases over the weekend, and it was Nico Hoerner that got the first steal. I think that's an element that they definitely need to incorporate more, especially with guys like him and with Dansby Swanson in the lineup.
Yeah, I think Nico, you know, could be, obviously they're using him at leadoff quite a bit. I don't know that David Ross is going to be the type of guy who has the same type of lineup every day. But, you know, in my mind, I feel like you could see Nico swipe 25 bags in a good season with numbers up across the board, across the game. I don't see how that's not a reachable number. Obviously these, you know, we're not talking Vince Coleman numbers or anything here, but, you know, with how much precipitously the stolen bases dropped off in the last two decades, really, across the game, you know, it's nice to see the numbers start to trickle up more across the game. But yeah, you'd like to see more than one in the first series here.
And Swanson did get thrown out on a stolen base attempt. So the Cubs were trying to get a little more active on the base paths, just wasn't always working out for them. The only other thing that I wanted to kind of hit on from that opening series was just a discussion of that defense. We of course saw the impact that Dansby Swanson has. Nico Horner had a throwing error in the first game, but otherwise I thought looked solid at second base. Really, the only question that I think this team has, and we brought it up in the season preview episode, was just the defense in right field being this like really weird black hole with Seiya Suzuki not there. Like everybody else, like it seemed like the Cubs really emphasized their defensive ability. And then in right field, they're like, yeah, we're just going to throw Miles Mastroboni out there. Yeah, we're just going to throw Patrick Wisdom out there. And yeah, Wisdom did have the throw. He caught a base runner on Sunday, I believe it was. But Mastroboni let that William Contreras ball bounce in front of him. Perhaps a guy like a Nelson Velasquez or a Mike Tauchman would have caught that and, you know, potentially changed the outcome of that game. Is there anything to the idea that maybe the Cubs have left themselves a little bit too shorthanded in terms of the right field defense with Seiya Suzuki out of the mix?
Yeah, maybe it points to maybe the timeline that they're thinking. You know, maybe they don't view the Seiya injury as impacting them beyond like maybe say the first like five series of the season. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's like a hint about where the front office's heads are at with that. But yeah, I mean, watching Mastroboni, you know, let that one drop and it just kind of the overall terrible day he had on Saturday. That's a tough sell to the fans when, you know, you addressed pretty much every other position of need in the offseason with players that were very solid, you know, defensively. And obviously you've run into the injury early here.
Yeah.
But you have, like you said, Velasquez, you know, waiting in the wings and could have easily made the team or Tauchman.
Yeah, either one of them.
I mean,
instead you kept eight infielders. Like that's, and I know that like you're going to give Edwin Rios some looks. I know that they're, for whatever reason, they are super high on Nick Madrigal and they want him in the lineup real regularly. But it just seems to me that you probably should have punted on one of those guys. And I know they wanted to get Velasquez regular playing time. It just feels like either he or Tauchman should have made this opening day roster with Suzuki not in the mix, because you're just really, you're putting yourself in a rough spot when you have those types of games where you're giving up those weak contact hits and you're just hoping that your outfielders can chase them down, and having a significantly below average defensive outfielder in right field just seems like a recipe for disaster when a team is pitching to contact as much as the Cubs are.
Yeah, like you said, you know, pitching and contact, this team's not going to miss a lot of bats, you know?
Yeah. Well, outside, except for Marcus Stroman and Justin Steele, apparently.
Yeah.
And we're both
Wisniewski. Yeah.
I was going to say, we were both on record like, oh, Hayden Wisniewski is probably going to lead the Cubs in strikeouts. And then Stroman and Steele both turn around and throw, you know, eight Ks in their starts. So I suppose, what do we know about anything?
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
We are going to talk about Velasquez here more for a little bit. However, first, huddle up, sports fans, because it's time to feel the power with PointsBet. All the way through April and May, PointsBet is giving away bonus bets every single day between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Central Time with the PointsBet Power Hour. Once that clock hits 5 p.m., your bonus bet drops and the power is in your hands. Download the PointsBet app today using code CHITALK, that's C-H-I-T-A-L-K, and set your watch for the Power Hour at 5 p.m. Central. PointsBet, your move. I myself am a PointsBet user. My Power Hour bets rarely go according to plan. So if I ever offer any betting advice whatsoever on this podcast, you're probably better off fading me because I'm a bit of a dope when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah, my problem is usually not pulling the trigger or not pulling the trigger quick enough because I had a good tip on San Diego State pretty early in the tournament and did not fall through on that. So
you would be in good shape going into that game this evening. I'm sorry to hear that for you, buddy. Speaking of that outfield defense, we've been talking extensively about it today. The Iowa Cubs also started their season over the weekend, and all they did, ho-hum, was hang 27 runs on the Columbus Clippers, who I keep having to stop myself from calling them the Columbus Crew, because apparently I'm a sports moron. So if you ever hear me say crew, I apologize in advance, but 27 runs in three outings for the Iowa Cubs. That offense being driven by Christopher Morel, who has already hit a home run this season. I believe he is 4-for-12 with three extra base hits for Iowa in their three games, started three different positions, just pointing that out. And then, of course, Nelson Velasquez also red hot, going 6-for-13 in that series with a home run and a pair of RBIs. Oh, and David Bote had a home run and is already hitting the, you know, tar out of the ball. So just wanted to, in case anybody's concerned about the Cubs offense, just letting you know that some of those guys that were kind of the tweener cuts at the end of camp, they're hitting a little bit already in Iowa. So, and I know Morel, the whole thing with him was just to get him regular playing time, play him in a few different positions, just get those at-bats in, get those strikeouts down. Just that stuff's important with him. Seeing Velasquez, though, like seeing that kind of production out of him, it's a little bit hard to swallow right now.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned with the Mastroboni, you know, sort of debacle that happened on Saturday. But when you look at the roster construction, like you said, with the eight infielders, it does make you question, why exactly are we not envisioning Velasquez, you know, making this team out of spring training? Like what more? I don't know what more he could have done in spring, and I don't know what more, you know. Obviously, you're not going to bring him up like first weekend of the season. You're not going to make a move like that, but
barring injuries, of course. Yeah,
right. But if he continues to mash like this, I mean, it's just more fuel to sort of push the front office into actually, you know, bringing him back up and sort of solidifying that outfield spot until Saya is fully healthy here.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that Mash Mervis, because you said the word mash, he also hit a home run in the opening series of the season against the Columbus squad. So there you go. Lots of power hitting by the Iowa Cubs. I know there was some kind of weird wind stuff going on at Principal Park. Apparently, Caleb Killian got touched up a little bit in his first outing. Gave up, I think it was 4 home runs, but wind was howling out in Iowa. So some of those power numbers, we do have to add that caveat. However, still good to see Christopher Morel go down there. I know that it could not have been easy for him to be left off of the big league roster, no matter what the reasoning was by the Cubs. Just to see him go down there and already start to have some good success is really good. I also should point out he did strike out 5 times on the weekend. So not like the strikeouts that we were seeing in Mesa. They've sort of continued down there in Des Moines.
Well, and like you said, with the wind and in Killian's kind of rough start there, they're 3-0 with a 5.14 ERA. So that's kind of odd. But like I mean, you said, with 27 runs, you're, that's how you're getting that done. So
They spotted Columbus 5 runs in one of the games and still beat them handily. So, you know, it's definitely going to be a fun season to watch the Iowa Cubs. The AA Cubs, the Smokies, are actually starting their season this week as well. That roster is shaping up to be absolutely loaded. So if Cub fans get a chance to watch any Smokies games this season, I know they're airing some on Marquee, and the minor league TV has also been looped in with MLB.TV. If you subscribe to that, strongly recommend watching some Smokies games. There's some dude named PCA that's going to be on that roster. Owen Casey's on that roster, just absolutely loaded with talent. So I think those two levels of Cubs baseball are going to be really entertaining this season.
A lot of talented pitching in Tennessee too. So
hell yeah, that's going to be, they're a title contender for sure. I mean, they'll ultimately get dudes called up, I'm sure. But I also think that team's just going to be a lot of fun to watch throughout the season. So that's our ringing endorsement of the Cubs minor league system here. We're going to transition one more time into another topic that is near and dear to both of our hearts. We talked about it extensively during spring training, and now we're kind of starting to see the fruits of it. And those are the rule changes, the pitch clock, the limit on the number of times you can throw to first base. All of these things have started, and they're already yielding positive results. I actually had sent an email out about this earlier today. Games are a half hour shorter so far this year than they were at this time last year. They're averaging about 2 hours and 34 minutes a game so far. Batting averages are also up 16 points already this season, thanks to the shift ban and other things. And then finally, double the amount of stolen bases so far this season than there were at this point last year. I got to say, man, the rule changes have been having some interesting impacts on the game. I know that some pitchers and catchers are kind of leery of the changes. They haven't really been overly fond of them. But I think overall, these rule changes, they've really been successful so far.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest, you know, the elephant in the room, obviously, is the game time. And when you talk about 50 games over the opening weekend, and 40 of those games were under 3 hours, I mean, I'd love to see in comparison to what it was last year, you know, not the average number overall, but just the opening weekend number overall for time last year. But, you know, when you think about what that means, like just from a personal, like human perspective, is, you know, people actually get to stay up and watch the game, watch an entire game, and maybe, like, you know, put their kids to bed at a decent hour, or they get to like stay up longer, you know, watching the game with a loved one or whatever. You know, it's just when you're not spending 3.5 hours watching a baseball game, and it cuts it, you know, cuts an hour off of that, or, you know, that's the extreme example, 3.5 hours or 4 hour game. But, sure, you know, when we're talking about losing a half hour, and then also in between that time, the action that is happening because of the pitch clock, it's sort of everything that they envisioned, that Theo envisioned, really, it's coming to fruition. I'm still not sure about the larger bases. I'm not sure if that's really the reason why we're getting, stolen base numbers going up, or if it has more to do with, you know, the pitch clock /
the limited throwovers have a huge impact on that.
Yeah, I think there's multiple factors that are impacting that, but I just love the fact that, you know, the games are ending in less than a fortnight. That's great.
I will say the one thing that I definitely am sympathetic with, and I'm definitely going to be paying attention to when I'm out in Arizona this weekend. I'm going to a Diamondbacks game, and then I'm planning on going to a couple of games at Wrigley Field in the next couple of weeks. I'm definitely going to pay attention to staffing at concession stands and ballparks, because I've heard some complaints that the lines are really long because they're still not quite up to snuff in terms of staffing. And so you're missing an inning or even two innings every time you get up to get food. that part of it, I definitely think is, you know, it's something that teams are going to need to address for sure, whether it's via more mobile ordering or something like that. I think that's one of the unintended consequences of these quicker games. I think that from the perspective of the fan watching on TV, I think that these rule changes have been really positive. They're definitely making, I think, for a more entertaining product as somebody who has consumed baseball for basically my entire life. Like, I definitely feel the entertainment value is up, but I'm wondering how it's going to impact the in-person experience and whether or not Major League Baseball is going to take that into account and whether owners are going to start, you know, trying to hire more concession staff or whatever other remedies they're going to potentially have to implement for this.
Yeah. And some of that could have to do with how each ballpark is constructed. Cause I hadn't heard any negative reviews as far as Wrigley in the opening weekend, as far as, like, you know, staffing or too long of lines. And obviously, you know, it's gone under more construction than pretty much any ballpark in the country, you know, over the last decade. So, but, you know, I think, like, to your point about the television viewing experience, I think we're going to start seeing, you know, because you're getting so many bites at the apple here, from a TV perspective with games being televised, I think you're going to start seeing a broadcast miss pitches, you know, miss parts of at bats, or, like, you know, cutting away and then not cutting back fast enough, just because it's not just the players and the umps that are getting used to this. It's everybody that works in baseball. It's everybody that professionally works, you know, on the broadcast side too. They're getting used to this as well. I've been very impressed with what I've seen on both the Cubs and White Sox sides, you know, in town here so far. Yep. And I think that's kudos to, you know, dedication and hard work on that end too. But I think you will start noticing that type of stuff. I think, for instance, you know, Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, they always like to do their little asides and their interviews, and, like, or whenever they're in St. Louis, they do this stupid chili thing. you know, I think you're going to have to start seeing less of that because there's actual baseball going on and not, you know, not a pitcher standing around for 40 seconds, 45 seconds waiting to throw another pitch. We're actually getting action, you know, at a consistent base, at a consistent level, throughout.
Did you anticipate Marcus Stroman would be the first pitcher to get dinged on the pitch clock violation?
I did not have him. He seemed to be on board with the whole thing too. Never really voiced any, because he's pretty vocal on Twitter. I never saw anything from him, you know, going against the rules. And obviously all this stuff's collectively bargained, so any of these players that do have a problem with it, like, whatever. Right. But yeah, I never had him pegged for having a slow delivery or being more deliberate to the plate. There were a couple, maybe it was Javi Guerra. There were a couple Brewers pitchers that I thought were going to, you know, maybe be the first ones to fall prey to that. But I did not have Stroman being that guy.
He did mention after the game that it still is an adjustment, getting used to having to have the ball in your glove and be ready to pitch within a certain amount of time. He didn't really seem like he wasn't complaining about it. He's just stating a very obvious fact, which is all of these players are having to get adjusted to it. I mean, batters are having to be in the box with 8 seconds left on the clock. Pitchers have to deliver the ball within that time. There's all sorts of little adjustments that they're all having to make. And I think that we're already seeing fewer violations than we did on opening day. I think they said there were, like, 15 violations or something like that on opening day. And by the end of the weekend, I think it had been trimmed in half in terms of the daily pitch clock dings. And I just think that the players are going to get used to this. I think the fans are going to get used to this too. There's just that stuff both in the broadcast experience and at the ballpark itself that I think that we're all just going to have to kind of get used to and make some changes to address. But yeah, I think overall we would have to say that this has been a success so far, and there's just, you know, some things that they're going to have to smooth out.
Yeah. I think the number was, I think there were 40 violations over the opening weekend. 39 of those were pitch clock related. Mm-hmm. One was a disengagement, I think.
I believe that is correct.
And I think Sunday they said there were only 7 total violations.
Yep.
And I think you probably had the most amount of games being played that day too.
Well, I mean, opening day and Sunday both had 15 games. Yeah. So yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. So it's really encouraging to see that type of stuff. Obviously, you know, numbers are, you know, kind of random sometimes. So,
well, this is baseball we're talking about. Statistics are always going to be random from that regard. I do want to throw out one quick little trivia nugget here before we start to put this podcast to bed. Now that we know Marcus Stroman is the first pitcher to ever be assessed a pitch clock violation in Major League Baseball, do you remember who the last hitter was that had to have four pitches thrown to him for an intentional walk?
Ooh.
It was also a Cub. That's the only reason I'm asking this question.
I'm going to go with Anthony Rizzo.
This is really funny you said Anthony Rizzo, because he did take an intentional walk in the 10th inning of Game 7 of the 2016 World Series. However, two batters later, a guy by the name of Addison Russell was also intentionally walked, and he was the final four-pitch intentional walk in Major League Baseball. So the next time you feel like winning a bar bet, apparently people are going to tell you Anthony Rizzo. It was actually Addison Russell, and you can thank your buddy James Naveau for giving you that little tidbit of information that you can impress your friends with. Oh, and also wanted to mention one other thing. This was the quickest opening day game for the Cubs in more than 30 years. It was 1986 was the last time the Cubs played. Yep. Played a game quicker than 221, which was, I believe, an hour faster than opening day last season. Oof. So clearly having an impact on the north side. And besides, when it's that cold outside, like it was Thursday and especially Saturday, yeah, quicker games might be slightly more appealing to fans who are freezing their tuchuses off in the bleachers at Wrigley Field.
I think it's definitely more advantageous for the pitcher and catcher too, and the umps. So
I do have one more little bit of shade I have to throw at the Milwaukee Brewers, who had a beautiful flyover planned for their opening day game up at, is it American Family Insurance Field now? I keep wanting to call it Miller Park. I think they
changed. I still call it Miller Park.
I think I'm going to as well. It's, I mean, they're not paying me to change what I call that stadium. However, they had the flyover and it was great, except for the fact that the roof was closed and therefore rendered it completely pointless. So yeah, Brewers, you won 2 out of 3, but apparently you're not great at planning opening day festivities. So got to give you a little bit of grief for that one.
Love it.
Anything else you want to add now that I've piled on the Milwaukee Brewers and laden you guys with a lot of like really weird stats you're probably never going to have to use in your lives?
No, it is a confirmed American Family Field.
There it goes. Thank you for correcting me as the final act that you have executed on this particular podcast. It's been, obviously we're looking forward to, you know, the rest of the season. We're going to have even more games to kind of go over next week. Talk about, you know, Drew Smyly, the Cubs staking him to multiple multi-run leads today and him blowing both of them. I'm sure that will come up in our next edition of the podcast. But until then, please, Cubs fans, let's try to stay positive. It's still early in April. He's Nate Poppin. I'm James Naveau. This has been the Cubs Talk Podcast, done in the virtual podcast studio powered by PointsBet. We will see you guys next week.